You are listening to Hoisting the Sail, a supply chain podcast. From our studio at the Brooklyn Navy Yard overlooking New York Harbor, we talk to the innovators and professionals who use the wind to power the maritime supply chain. I'm your host, Kat Bride. Hoisting the Sail is presented by Windsupport NYC. We have a very special guest joining us today on the show. John Cooper is the CEO of Bahr Tech, also known as Bahr Technologies. John is joining us on the line from Portsmouth on the south coast of England. We're delighted to have you, John. Thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks to you, Kat. I'm really going to enjoy our conversation, I'm sure, and thanks for your interest.
We have been following Bahr for a long time. We're sailing enthusiasts ourselves. And in fact, myself and a few of the team from Windsupport NYC, we were able to see the team in action in 2016 on the Hudson River in New York City as part of the exhibition races in preparation for the America's Cup. This is high-tech stuff, and we want to know everything about it. So I'm going to get to the nitty-gritty in just a moment, but we're going to start with you. John, how does somebody get to be the CEO of Bahr Tech? Were you a sailor? Were you in, did you have a professional career before? Did you know somebody? Tell us about the start of how a guy like you gets to be a CEO of Bahr Tech.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Kat. I think a lot of luck along the way, but you know, a few bright moves maybe. I'm actually an accountant by trade, so don't hold that against me. I trained with a big four company called Ernst & Young, and then spent some time in a good dirty business car rental with Avis and Budget. And then had the luck of my career and applied to join McLaren Formula One racing team and became their finance director in 2005. And my career really took off from there, from finance director. I've always been commercially focused and became commercial director and after 15 years was eventually chief business officer and worked with some incredible characters in that sport, learned a lot about drive and performance and determination and actually an old boss of mine, a guy called Martin Whitmarsh, who was actually the team principal of McLaren through a lot of that period where we worked together, actually joined Ben Ensley and at the BAR racing team. And those guys were actually running the boat that you saw on that Hudson River that time in 2016. And that's the link to where I am today, because Martin and Ben and the CTO now here, a guy called Simon Schofield, founded this great company. And I was lucky enough to come across in 2019 and become the CEO.
I was going to ask you, John, as the director of finance at McLaren Racing, is that the coolest job in accounting?
Well, it's got to be one of them, isn't it? You know, to actually spend several hundred million pounds putting two cars on the grid 20 times a year. It's one of great priority, but great prestige, a bit of glamour thrown in. I love my cars. I've arguably swapped industries from petrol guzzlers to fuel savers right now. But, you know, I love my time at McLaren. Great, great fun.
And the transition into BAR, there's a lot of speed involved, but what about joining BAR was most attractive to you?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Great question. Sorry, Kat, I didn't mean to butt in there. Great question. There are a lot of similarities, actually. I think, you know, America's Cup and Formula One has something really big in common, and that's about attracting the brightest engineers, the most creative minds, the most energetic, driven people, you know, and that's the big thank you from Formula One from me, because that really installed a different character for me. And actually, I was looking to leave Formula One, looking to really get out, looking to run my first business, looking to make that transition from the finance side to CEO. And you know, that this sort of industry really attracted me in terms of high performance, but also in terms of technology. You know, so in McLaren, you know, the technology on the cars is huge, and you know, the road cars have actually learned and got a lot from the high performance cars in Formula One. But likewise, actually, it's the whole story of of the birth of BAR technologies, that actually at the end of America's Cup cycle, although it's this fantastic sporting spectacle, actually at the end of an America's Cup cycle, so the end of the 2017 cycle, you know, you talked about the prelim races in 2016, but in 2017, as soon as that Cup cycle is over, unfortunately there are no rules. The sport resets itself. A lot of the fantastic engineers are lost to the sport. A lot of the tool sets and the skill and the knowledge is lost to the sport. And actually, in 2016, we talked about Martin Whitmarsh, but another guy at the heart of this, guy called Simon Schofield, they got together. Simon was the head of design for that particular boat and said, let's not lose all these people. Let's not lose all these tool sets. Let's start a technologies business. And that's how BAR Technologies was born. So it was a real natural transfer for me. I knew one of the founders. I love technology transfer from high performance sport to commercial reality. Been doing that a bit with McLaren. So, you know, I think that everything was right for me to make that transition. And as I said, always wanted to be the boss. You know, this is my first chance.
And so in keeping all of those skill sets, those engineers, those naval architects, that's all to give the BAR team an advantage in the next America's Cup. What else are you working on?
Yeah, so actually I've got to explain the slight divorce between BAR Technologies and the America's Cup. So it was actually a brand new company. Mm-hmm. And some of those engineers that had been previously working on the America's Cup came across to work for our new company.
All right. So at the moment,
yes, we always have an eye on the America's Cup, and indeed we help and we consult, but we're not actually now currently involved in the America's Cup. So we've taken those tool sets and the knowledge and quite a lot of the people. I'm looking out of my office window now, Kat, and I can see, you know, 10 or 15 people that are ex-America's Cup. I can see 5 or 6 people that are ex-Formula One, and the rest are just incredibly bright individuals.
And the projects that you're working on right now, can you tell us about them?
Sure. I think we've got about 4 or 5 different streams of business, and maybe we'll park Wind Wings for the end because I know you're interested in that.
Yes, but very, very much so. That's going to be the biggie in the conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Let me do some of the less biggies, even though they're quite biggie in themselves. But we're very lucky. We're a private company. We're decently funded with some fantastic shareholders. And that presented me with a great opportunity. So in my first years, they said, have a look around, have a look at the technology you've got. What can you guys invent? How can we commercialize it? And basically gave the guys and the girls working here, you know, not free remit, but guided remit to go and actually have a look and see what we could do for industry. And there's a couple of things that came out of that. You will have seen from that Hudson River, one of the most dramatic things about the Formula One, America's Cup is actually the boats fly. They fly on hydrofoils.
It's incredible. It blew my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so?
It blew my mind.
It is incredible, isn't it? How can a boat that heavy, even though we try and make them light, fly that quick and in fact race quicker than the wind itself? You know, some really, really fantastic technology. So, you know, that's the thing that everybody sees. And we do actually use foiling technology today. We don't have many projects that actually lift boats completely out of the water, because obviously on a commercial front, you know, actually that might be a little bit too exciting. But we have designed and developed a wind farm boat, in fact. So there's another real clean tech industry. And that itself had quite a dirty secret, still does today. So we're quite proud in the UK and in Europe, and certainly coming across to the States now, of how we've designed and developed, you know, really good clean energy in the form of wind farms. Mm-hmm. But of course, it's still people that have to go out and repair those farms, maintain them. And they are up to now going out on catamarans that are developed fishing boats, but nonetheless, the technology hasn't moved on a huge amount. So we thought we would have a go at improving
that tech, because the catamarans are burning, you know, up to 4,000 tons or emitting up to 4,000 tons of CO2. And if you know your stats, Kat, actually the average English person is about 7 tons of CO2. So 4,000 tons a year is a lot. So we thought, let's design a cleaner boat. And we've come up with the Bartek 30, imaginatively named. It's obviously one of ours, and it's 30 meters long. So that's the Bartek 30. And it's a very novel craft. It's a long, slender hull, which really deals with the efficiency of a vessel. So it's a very, very, very skinny, looks very, very fast. And that's because it is very fast. But the key thing is it's supported by a SWAS style outrigger. And we call it a proa. Think of a sort of a Polynesian canoe with a bamboo outrigger. That's the sort of shape it is. You know, I'd invite podcast listeners to look it up on the internet. It's going to change the market. It's a 30% fuel saver. So we're very, very happy with that. It actually is lifted a little bit out of the water, but not fully out of the water. So the foils are actually working hard in two modes. One, they reduce the displacement of the boat and therefore give further fuel efficiencies. But they're also providing dynamic stability. So they're reducing the vertical accelerations that people experience on board these vessels. So seasickness is reduced effectively. And of the vertical accelerations, we're estimating that 70% will be removed. So a really good, smooth ride, saving a lot of fuel. And I'll come back and tell you, we've got a few customers for that already. And then there's a couple of other projects that we're doing. We've just launched a very, very interesting leisure boat. And this is one that does fly. So we looked at the leisure market and said, what does the leisure market need? What it needs is perhaps a far better range on electric boats. So, you know, electric boats are certainly going to make the transition in the same way as we've seen on the road. But, you know, actually the resistance of a car, the rolling resistance, is not fantastically high. So actually you get quite a long way for battery power. Actually, it's very much different in the water. You know, the hull of a boat, no matter how small, really is quite big in comparison to that resistance we were talking about with cars. And therefore, to make batteries really work, you have to get that hull out of the water. So we've actually developed, along with a smashing UK company called Spirit Yachts, a flying wooden boat. We call it the E-foiler. It's going to have 100 nautical miles range. We'll take off about 12 knots and fly at a cruising speed of 22 knots. So look out for that one. Maybe we'll get one to the Hudson River at some stage. But, you know, that's a truly exciting project. And then lastly, you know, we're actually not only fitting foils to our boats, but we're also fitting foils to other commercial boats. So we've just fitted one to our partner Chartwell Marine's boat. It's called the SeaCat Spectre for SeaCat SeaCat Marine, who work with the wind farms in the North Sea. And that's already proven to increase the top speed by a couple of knots. Most importantly, to reduce the fuel burn by 8%, and generally handle far better and give that sort of reduced accelerations that I was talking about for our own boat.
How do customers find you, John?
Well, as you can hear, I'm a pretty enthusiastic character. So, you know, at some point they normally get a word in edgeways, but, you know, I think I'd like to think they allow my passion to make sure that we're driving the right, you know, supplier behavior for the customers. And, you know, we work with quite a few. I mentioned SeaCat Services there. Right. You know, I'm delighted to tell you, actually, SeaCat Services is the first purchaser of our Bartek 30. So there's one in build. Actually, if I really screw my neck, I can see the Isle of Wight where I'm sitting. And it's built a great little yard called Diverse Marine on the Isle of Wight. So, you know, big shout outs to SeaCat Services. They certainly have seen, you know, the advantages of the Bartek 30's hull form. And, you know, we've got a couple of other orders from them and another company called High Speed Transfer. So we're actually breaking into this wind farm market. And that's, you know, that's a mixture of fantastic technology. You know, that's the main thing. You can't sell technology that's not cutting edge if you're trying to change the playing field. But it's also about, you know, enthusiasm for your product and getting out there and telling people the advantages of it and building relationships. You know, there's a lot of people I'd love to thank, but probably for another time. You know, it really is a relationship game.
Where are the ships built, right? After a customer has gone over with you their specs, what they need, you give them your expertise, what's possible. How does a new creation come into being? What's the motion or the lead time?
Great question. So I mentioned that Diverse Marine are building this first Bartek 30. So at the time, we had a customer, Seacat Services, great guy called Ian Bayliss, and he said, I really want to buy those boats. I really want to make them. So together we looked at a tender process, and Ian's built a lot of his boats over at Diverse. So it was likely that we were going to build there. But we're also building, you know, really strong relationships with other UK yards. You know, UK is quite strong for aluminium builds. You know, you've got Mainstay and Manor and White. So there's three or four to choose from. Alley Cats in there too. So in the UK, it's about getting good quotes, building those relationships with the yard, looking at the lead times. So this fast Bartek from start of cutting alley to its launch in June, so it's really getting close to seeing it on the water. It was about 14 months, you know, and then follow-on vessels, you know, they can be made in 12 months each. So, you know, that's really good in the UK, well-established. Just looking at your side of the water, actually, Kat, you know, so I'm talking to a great little shipyard called St. John's in Florida. I'm talking to Metal Shark, I'm talking to Bro Brothers, Gladding and Hearns up there on the river. You know, we're starting to break into the US market, and it's really important to get your product known at the really important alley yards.
We're so happy to hear that. I wanted to ask you, John, the marine architects and naval engineers at BAR Tech, what's your feedback from them, or how are they finding the transition between being with with the America's Cup, right? As you said, some of them have come over, right? Yeah. Designing a very high performance vessel and really being in the next wave of naval architecture and marine engineering with you guys. Really, yeah. Taking it to the commercial side and really making a difference, it sounds like.
Yeah. Great question. You know, and there's swings and roundabouts to the answer to it, you know, because of course, America's Cup, if you're a naval arch, you know, that is the pinnacle. If you're, you know, if you're a mechanical engineer, maybe Formula One's your pinnacle, you know, but they have made that transition, and they're used to really working on essentially prototype boats for racing. You know, they say in America's Cup, or in Formula One, it's great if the car or the yacht breaks down just after the finish. You know, that means that you've engineered it to the max. But of course, commercials aren't like that. So the first thing that, you know, we really talk to the guys about is performance is important, but reliability, robustness, and long-term performance is far more important than just short-term performance. So there is that transition. And in fact, also, cost comes into play. So you've got to design a little bit for cost of manufacture. So they might think that that's a little bit of the compromise, but some of the big things are, of course, there's the variety of the work. You know, so I can offer these engineers lots of different types of work, lots of different types of project, you know, and that is very stimulating for them. You know, they're working in a commercial environment. So sometimes I have to say, right, stop your pencils, put your pencils down. That is the design we're going to sell. By all means, keep iterating and do an even better product next time. But we've got to cut off, and we've got to make a great product for our customers. So that's a bit of a transition to do. But actually, I think, you know, I and they, you know, speaking to, you know, Lauren, our head of engineering here, and all of the other gang that work here, you know, it is rewarding that we've got three or four products that are real game changers, and they're going to change the market that we're working in. But we're getting a lot of very flattering attention, you know, actually from people like yourselves. You know, actually they can see that we're trying to make a difference. So it's not just the commerciality of it. They're genuinely in it for the sustainability side, you know, and that really drives us on too.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, John, of the different expertise and products that you're making and different customers that you're servicing, that's really grown as well since the founding of the company. So you're not only into the shipping and the wind farms and the private yacht. I'd love to talk to you about the mean potatoes, the work boats, the ferries, the passenger transport. Tell us about the new developments there.
Yeah. So we did a little bit on the work boats with the Bartek 30, but let me talk mm-hmm. to you about, you know, what's going to happen after that. So we've got this wonderful boat that's 30% more fuel efficient, 70% less vertical accelerations. That's one iteration. You know, then the next golden thing is, how do we make a zero emission workboat? How do we get these technicians to the wind farms without the emission of any CO2 at all? And everybody talks about, is that possible? I can tell you, Kat, it's entirely possible. Mm. You know, so now we've got the right hull form, we can make better use of batteries, we can look at hydrogen fuel cells or hydrogen combustion engines. You know, that's the next thing that we're looking at. We're already doing studies. We're already thinking about how we achieve that. Not too many sort of giant leaps at once. So it was first the hull form and now it's the propulsion. You know, and the 30 is a good sized boat because it pushes onto the turbines nicely and allows those workers to go to work. But, you know, actually, what if we've got an even higher sea? What if we have to go further offshore? What if we actually have to have crew members staying in accommodation offshore? You know, at the moment, the wind farms are run by something called SOVs, service operation vessels, and they're like sort of floating hotels, and we've got them in Europe, and you'll have them in America, where these really big vessels costing, you know, nearly $100 million, you know, they can be very large, and they basically station themselves offshore, and these smaller boats called daughter craft or crew transfer vessels that we've just been talking about come and pick those workers up and take them to the wind farms. And our idea is a little bit different. So our idea is, actually, yes, there is a place for these floating hotels, but, you know, this industry is growing up, and, you know, actually, but basically these people are being asked to work, you know, a couple of weeks offshore, couple of weeks back on leave, couple of weeks offshore, and people's lives are different. People's lives are changing, and we're thinking of more of a perhaps a high-speed boat that enables a different work pattern. So we're working on something we're calling an SATV, which is on the same platform as the Bartek 30, but 50 meters long. You've guessed it, we're calling it the Bartek 50. And it's going to have enough speed to get to the wind farms very quickly. So it's going to be, you know, 40-50 knot boat. It can have accommodation on it, or it can sort of be equipped with business class seats that are really getting these people either to the farms or the SOVs really, really quickly. So it's a mixture of different types of boats in this industry, different types of propulsion, developing technology around our boats. So, you know, we're pushing the wind farms to provide us with offshore charging buoys so we can charge the batteries when we're offshore. We're asking, you know, great companies like Toyota whether we can start thinking about using their hydrogen fuel cells. You know, all of these things, you know, we see ourselves as great designers and inventors, but actually integrators as well. You know, there's no point in a company like BAR trying to invent everything. It's about actually bringing together tremendous innovation.
Do you find, John, that there were companies that you had reached out to and they just weren't ready for you yet? And now they've started to come around? I mean, and I'm asking that because, John, we know here at Wind Support NYC, the shipping industry is very conservative.
Yeah.
And yeah. And there's a lot of reluctance to make investments because there's a lot riding on it. There's a lot of risk. But yeah. Are you finding kind of happy stories where you'd approach someone, or maybe someone at another company had reached out to you and it just wasn't the right timing, or they were just too afraid, or they didn't really see the necessity or the improvements that that you're making, and now they've kind of come around and seen the light.
Yeah, no, very good. There's a lot of those in Wind Wings, which I know I'm gonna we're gonna come on to, but still some on the Bartek series of boats that we were just talking about. So, you know, a lot of my business, I'm talking to charterers, to owners, to big petrochemical companies, to food transportation companies, and actually one of the really first contacts I had was from a very big petrochem, and they were looking to transfer their technicians to oil platforms, not by helicopter. And the guy there is very forward thinking. I won't embarrass him by naming him, but he'll know who he is. Mm-hmm. And he said, love the Bartek 30. Could you get technicians to the platforms really quickly so I could stop spending $20 million on helicopters? And we said, sure. And we developed a boat. Actually, it was the first thinking about the Bartek 50. And that particular company, you know, without doubt, we've got a promise from them that they will start buying our series of boats. But it is a big conservative company, and our technology is very novel. So the swing there is, Kat, that, you know, the Bartek 30 goes in the water. We prove the platform. We prove the reliability and the savings. And then these big companies then can see the platform in the water. And we absolutely can predict and very confidently predict that these businesses will then buy a lot of our product. So, you know, we're really looking forward to the next 9 months that, yes, people are conservative, but when you see something that's proven and delivering, then that conservatism, you know, melts away, and then we can really start selling these fantastic boats.
I think for so many ship owners and charters, John, it's a fear in a way. Again, because there is so much risk, but because the transformations in the shipping industry, they were so slow for such a long time. And we've found in the past 5 years, all of a sudden it's ramping up. Yeah. And I'm sure you've seen this as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic news for us, you know, but great news for the world, actually, you know. So you're right, you know, the IMO set some rules probably about 5 years ago now, and mm-hmm. actually said, you know, we've got to reduce sulfur initially, and you know the heavy marine changed a little bit, heavy marine oil, you know, and then they said, right, well, we've got to cut emissions by 30%, then 40%, and you know, actually, governments were a little bit slow to embrace this, but they have legislated and they've gone further, and we've just been through COP26, and everybody's talking about it now. So these macro factors are now playing a big part in, you know, in actually our wind propulsion offering called Wind Wings. And you can actually see that industry and owners are now embracing, and they want to be offering low carbon emitting ships to their customers. You know, and there was lots of resistance. You know, I think, you know, ports are another thing. Mm. You know, if you own a port, you know, that you want a ship to come in, load and unload, and then be out to sea as quickly as possible, because, you know, time is money. You know, and the thought of us, you know, potentially even holding that operation up for even 10 minutes isn't going to go down too well. You know, and that's the sort of thing that we were hearing 2 years ago. You know, now, you know, ports are embracing our technology and harbours are embracing the Bartek 30. Anything to get emissions down in the big ports and harbours. You know, now we're getting great support from that community, which is tremendous development.
Sure. Do you have an ideal customer, or maybe a big fish that you're hoping to catch? Who would you hope to work for or work with in the future?
Well, we're lucky that we've got some big customers, actually. You know, mm-hmm. So, you know, actually, maybe it's time to talk about Cargill. Yeah, biggest private American company. So, you know, actually as a customer, they don't come much bigger than that. And mm-hmm. and they've long had the ambition, before we were even born as a business, looking forward to the decarbonisation of shipping. So, you know, hats off to those guys. And you know, actually, they were looking at different types of fuel, different types of novel technology to reduce fuel burn. you know, and that really brought us together, you know, a couple of years ago, you know, and they've been a really keen supporter of our technology. And they actually will be the first customer for WinWing. So we've got a great customer in Cargill. We've got a lot of customers that unfortunately have got NDAs written next to their names. But
understood. You know, mm-hmm.
I've got about three or four other customers that if I was able to tell you their names, you would instantly recognize them as some of the world's biggest customers, so world's biggest businesses. So, you know, the future for WinWings is incredibly bright.
And are you finding, John, as word gets around, that a lot of these big operators are deciding to work with you, that the as leaders, it's the companies behind them that are starting to knock on your door?
Yeah, exactly. So the sell of this was quite hard a year and a half ago. I've got to tell you, don't tell anyone, it's quite easy to sell these now. You know, actually, a bit like the Bartek 30, when we get one on the water, you know, we absolutely stand behind our simulation predictions of fuel savings. And, you know, we always talk about percentages, but actually it's just important to talk about fuel saved. So the business case is going to be very, very good. It is very good. It's obviously better on some routes that are windier than others. But again, when you get these things on the water, prove the business case, then actually the sell becomes even easier. But you know, just thinking about the journey, you know, we've partnered with shipyards to build the Bartek 30. You know, we're concentrating on the design, the invention, the improvement, the iteration of that design. So, you know, we're the pointy heads in Portsmouth, but we've got to have good partners and delivery partners, and probably time to talk about great Norwegian company called Yara Marine.
Yes.
About a year ago, I sort of said, this is going really, really well. We do need a delivery partner. We can't hope to be a global supply business that's going to supply 40 meter high wings to boats in China, Japan, Korea, and everywhere else where these boats are serviced. We need a big brother partner, you know. And, you know, the CEO there, a guy called Thomas Kinodis, he's an absolutely great guy. And we got on like a house on fire straight away and built a great partnership whereby Yara Marine, they manage the procurement of these wings that we've developed. They manage the assembly, the manufacture, and the fitting of these wings, and leave us to look at the control systems design, the design of the wings themselves, you know, a lot of the design approvals we're working on, and they very much look at the operation side of getting this technology to the water. So, you know, it is about knowing what you're good at, and more importantly, knowing what you're not going to be able to achieve alone.
Right. And that you've provided a beautiful segue into WinWings.
This there is
we're getting into that now. We can't contain ourselves anymore. So Bartek WinWings, this is an advanced wind assisted propulsion and route optimization system. And it is tagged that this solution will reduce fuel consumption and CO2 emissions by up to 30% on an average trading pattern. 30% is huge. Before we get to the 30%, I want to talk about how big these are, where they're made, how they work, and how they help.
Fantastic. Yeah, very good segue. It was as if we wrote that ourselves. It was brilliant.
So now I know why they make you the talker, John.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, we talked about Yara Marine, and actually they're in the title. So they are Bartek WinWings by Yara Marine Technologies. And, you know, I think it's really, really important to give kudos where it's due. So we even included them in our product naming. And, you know, and that's just, you know, super, super, super important. You know, so the design of these wings, as I think you said, you know, they are huge. The design is 37.5 meters high, and that might be the smallest in a future family of wings, Kat. So, you know, 37 meters of steel and glass composite, making the aerodynamic shape. Each wing is three elements. There's a large central element and two smaller as a leading edge and a trailing edge, so it forms a sort of a crescent shape, which is the best for propulsion. for thrust, and that all sits on top of a steel turntable that actually turns to make sure that we can gain the most from the different wind directions. So you can harness the wind in lots of different wind directions, because the last thing you want on a tanker or a bulk carrier is actually to have to turn the vessel. You want a good route and actually make those sails do the work. So that's both the theory and the reality of it. But we've got other disciplines that also deserve a mention. You know, the systems control engineers have got a huge part to play in this. The mathematicians, they're the ones working on the algorithm and taking the readings from the live sensors on board these vessels and working out the positions where the wings should be, such that actually it's not the crew on the vessels that are doing the sailing, it's the system that's actually providing the best shape for the wings. Yes. And the best angle for the wings. So all of that's really important.
And so we've seen a couple technologies now while we've been having this podcast that they've had, let's say, a similar shape, but not necessarily function the same way. For instance, we chatted with VPLP last year. I know you know those guys pretty well, and they were working on a wing sail, but it was hit a button and it would pop up out of the ship. Now, for you with these turntables, looks like they have significant advantages in that it's not something that will have to emerge from the hull at all. And when it comes to passing under bridges or going through canals, they fold. That right. is so interesting. I don't think we've ever seen anything like that before.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, there's a lot of great wind technology out there, and I'm a keen promoter of all wind technology. By the way, Kat, don't tell anyone, but ours is the best. But I'm still going to promote everybody else's wind technology. Mm-hmm. That's for sure, mm-hmm. you know.
Good
it's one of those
John.
Industries. It's one of those industries that actually we're all giving each other a leg up, you know, because it is novel. You know, obviously we used to sail merchant ships around the world in days gone by, but you know, of course, the combustion engines come in and eradicated wind propulsion, and now we're all trying to bring it back. So, you know, there's a lot of great companies out there. We've looked at the problem holistically and said, how do we get the maximum thrust for the minimum material? And work in combination with the vessel. So we're specifically looking at originally bulk carriers and tankers. And actually, it is important in some instances to have a very high wing and a very big surface area to provide the most thrust. But it's also very, very important to look after those bridges and canals. The thought of going through the Suez or Panama canals with very big wings up would fill any captain with dread, and in fact they wouldn't do that route. And then actually bringing vessels into port or going under bridges, very important to fold them to the deck. So mm-hmm. we looked at all the different challenges, spent a lot of time in development phase before we actually plumped for the design, which of course is, you know, aerodynamically is incredibly important. And so we've patented our design. It's three element. Those three elements work collectively together, and we believe that's the way to get the most fuel saving.
I've been trying to think of something clever to say there. That was terrific. John, tell us a little bit more about this the partnership with BAR and Yara. Who started it? And how did it evolve?
But it goes back to just a little over a year ago, so probably about 14, 15 months ago, and we sort of thought we're doing really, really well. We're getting our approvals with class societies. We've got customers interested. We need to grow massively, and we need to grow around the world if we're going to deliver this. And I and the shareholders and the management team here at BAR thought that was a risk to what we were actually trying to achieve, you know, and actually then thought, let's think about partnership. And we looked at developing partnerships with some of the other, I don't count ourselves as a big company, with some of the big marine technology businesses, you know, and you can name them, you know, Wärtsilä and ABB and these sort of type of people. And actually Yara Marine was also on that list. And what really impressed me about Yara Marine is that they'd scaled a business before. They made their business out of scrubbers, so taking out the SOx and NOx of vessel exhausts, and they'd really scaled that business impressively well. By doing that, they'd been present in some of the low cost manufacturing territories. They had infrastructure in China, in Poland, in Sweden and Norway, obviously really big marine countries themselves. And most of all, a really enthusiastic and driven management team. So I mentioned Tom earlier. I'll give him another mention there. You know, he really attracted me to partner with their business, you know, and things have gone really, really well. We signed an MOU, I think it was about November 2020 it would have been. And then we spent a lot of time actually turning that MOU into reality. So they went out and did some procurement work and helped us make our designs ready for manufacture, you know, and really good partnership work. And then we thought, well, actually, these guys really do want to be partners. You know, it feels right. The culture's right. The management fit is right. And therefore, we signed a really strong contract with them to become the supplying partner, as I was saying.
So, have you learned a lot from them, John? Do you think that of course at Bartek, you guys are all experts, but are you finding that your customers are teaching you a lot about their business and that's come to improve yours?
Yeah, you know, I can speak for myself. I had a very low bar in marine when I came in, so you know, I'm learning, you know, what to call the front of a ship and what to call the back of the ship. So, you know, I had a really low bar. So I'm learning every day. For me, every day is a marine school day, that's for sure. But I can talk about the experts, the ladies and gents that work out outside for BAR. You know, I think it's fair to say that we're all learning together. You know, if you don't learn, you don't go forwards. So we're learning the markets. We're learning the customer bases. We're learning the big vessels, we're learning the trade routes, we're working with Yara, we're working with those big customers, Cargill and those other ones I can't mention, but I can mention Cargill, so I will again. Mm-hmm. So they're all putting knowledge and time and expertise into this pot that we're developing. So, you know, it sounds a bit corny, Kat, but it's a really great team effort. It's really good.
It sure sounds like it. Now, I did want to talk about one of your accolades. In November of last year, Bartek was awarded an approval in principle. This is an award specifically for your wind propulsion technology with Yara Marine. This was from the Classification Society of DNV. Tell us what the approval in principle is about. It's another kind of industry jargon that not all of our listeners will understand. Can you break that down for us?
Yeah, no problem. It's I wonder where you were going with that as an accolade, because yes, of course, it's a big step, but actually there's a lot more on the roadmap. But let me just tell you about how we work with the class society. So, you know, DNV are one of the biggest class societies in the world. You, mm-hmm. stateside, you've got ABS, American Bureau of Shipping, and the UK there's Lloyds, and you know there's NK in Japan, and lots of others besides BV and etc. And those guys, those industries, those societies, if you like, they class the vessels and any large appendages that we put on the vessels. And of course, wind wings are an important part of how a vessel will work and how it will trade in the future. So, and actually, you know, another big shout out to Cargill, and there were some other companies that were involved in some HAZID meetings. So we got together with DNV, Cargill, a couple of other really big shipping companies, and said, look, here's our design. You know, what can you see that will cause a ship a problem, a port a problem, a canal a problem, the safety of the vessel or the seafarers? How can we ensure that collectively WinWings works as a product, so it's performing well, but as importantly, safety at sea is absolutely paramount. So let's really pull this design apart. Let's see if we can improve it. And most importantly, let's go through all of the fail safes that you need to do. And that was really an important step along the process to AIP, approval in principle, but most importantly, design approval. So AIP is a milestone along that design approval. And actually, DNV have made it their business to try and be a world leader in wind propulsion, but the others no doubt will be really important in this industry too. And they played, you know, I've got to say, hats off, a really big part in that journey. They worked with us, they worked for us, they rewrote rules because, of course, these sails are new technology. You know, we were looking at the technology that governs cranes on boats because they're large structures on boats, accommodation because, you know, the accommodation on blocks on boats provide quite a big windage blocking, you know, very much like the wings themselves. So all of those things were really pertinent bits of information. And we got our AIP, as you said, last year. But actually, we've just had our loads approved by DNV as well. We're just going through the final approval for the actual design. So then we'll be authorised. That design effectively is authorized for putting on vessels themselves. So one of the milestones along the way. But yeah, we were pleased to get the AIP.
Now, with WinWings, John, we know how they work, but how are they fitted to the deck of cargo ships, right? These aren't just made for new builds. There's a purpose for them to be retrofitted as well, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, sustainability is not about just the future builds. You know, we're interested in new builds, of course, but we're interested in the legacy fleet as well, you know, because this legacy fleet does need to become greener. So, you know, actually our first installation, Kat, will be a Kamsarmax vessel. It is a very, very big bulk carrier and it's a retrofit. So we've been working with integrators, you know, I think you actually mentioned earlier Delta Marine, but actually there's another integrator we're working with, Cyber Marine, on this particular vessel. And they're working on the ship side of the job. So we're giving them the weight of the wings, the loads that we're expecting to transmit into the deck of the vessel for this propulsion. And it's their job working with us to reinforce the vessel around the bulkhead such that load can be transmitted in a safe way into the vessel itself. So there's a lot to do ship side, but if you want to make these savings and improvements, then there's, you know, that's the job of work to do. So, you know, there's a lot of partnership going on, not just with customers, but with vessel designers as well.
And with this particular retrofit, how do you determine if the costs are worth it? What kind of ROI are you targeting here?
Yeah, it's a good question. The ROI depends on so many different things. Mm. It depends on the vessel, whether it's a retrofit, whether it's a new build. It depends on the route that the vessel might take in the future. Because if you've got a route that's just doing 100 nautical miles each time and it's all coastal, my advice would be don't give me a call and ask me to put WinWings on it. But if it's more of a tramping vessel, taking routes across the big oceans, specifically on some of the old merchant routes, etc., which are enormously windy, then, you know, you're getting really strong fuel savings, and then you're going to get really strong business cases. So we work with each of our prospective customers. So, you know, we'd strike up email conversations and have Teams meetings, and then I'd invite them to give us our fuel consumption and tell us the routing that they're going to be working on in the future. We will then actually spend a great deal of time and effort looking at the fuel savings that we will be able to achieve. You know, and we don't cherry pick. We really take some of the adverse bits about putting wings on vessels. We don't just say, here's the thrust of the wing. You know, that looks like you could save 50% of fuel on a given day, therefore the fuel savings 50%. We really go through the motions and look at historic wind patterns, start journeys and voyages all the way through the year, and really offer a very holistic answer to their business case. And you know, just like any big CapEx purchase, Cap, then they crunch their numbers and come back and actually say, well, we think actually we've got a very, very good business case. And that's just at base level. So a lot of people were looking at heavy marine oil. You know, at this time it's you know, $700 a ton, I think last time I looked, something like that. It depends on the vessel owner and the charterer's attitude to carbon tax. That's obviously coming, no doubt about that. You know, some people like to add a carbon tax to their business case. What we are certain about, you know, and we actually haven't touched on it, and maybe now is a good time, is the future fuels. So we believe, even when we're looking at heavy marine oil, there's some incredibly strong business cases for both retrofits and new builds. But at $800 a ton, you are getting a good payback period. But it's not an area of expertise for me, and I don't know what the winner's going to be, whether it's hydrogen, ammonia, you know, fuel cells, combustion engines, batteries, mixture of all of those things. You know, I don't know what it will be, but I can tell you, Kat, it's going to be a lot more expensive than $800 a ton. You know, these new fuels are going to be $2,500 a ton upwards. Certainly. And what that means is going to be even more incentive to fit alternative auxiliary power supply, such as wind, because guess what? The price of wind, once you've done the CapEx, that's free. So, you know, actually that's $0 a ton.
We've been saying that all along, John.
That's it. That's a good business case, right?
Mm-hmm. I know we're getting short on time. We're coming up to the end of the program, but I wanted to throw a couple wild card questions your way.
Sure.
We always like to ask our guests to look into your crystal ball and tell us, in your view, about either the transformation of the shipping industry, decarbonization. What do you think is the most critical part of this transformation? Is it governance at the IMO? Is it financing? Is it ocean preservation? Or you can stand on your soapbox and you can give us a complaint. You can register your feelings on the environment as it is, and or tell us what your predictions are for the next 5 years in the shipping industry. The floor is yours, John.
Yeah, I'm going to do a couple of those things, if it's all right. You know, I think that we're going to continue on the macro traction path. So the IMO is doing great work. Flags are doing good work. Governments are enforcing this thing. The youth is saying we must have a cleaner world. All of those factors are building up together with the business cases. That brings us down actually to the future of shipping. I truly believe that in a few short years, certainly five, you won't be ordering a vessel without wind propulsion. That is a true prediction. So I'm going to read it. I'm going to listen to this back in 5 years' time and see if we were right. Mm-hmm. But actually, I absolutely believe bulk carriers and tankers will all be built with wind propulsion of some kind. And then the new fuels, because they're coming in, they will require a new and different powertrain. So I actually think my bet is that propulsion and the powertrains will be decoupled. So you may have some generators or fuel cells and batteries, and they will all provide energy to electric motors in vessels. And actually, you know, when the wind is blowing hard, these generators may well be recharging batteries, so you don't actually need propulsion for the vessel. And when the wind is not blowing so hard, you'll use some of that energy to propel the vessel. So I think you'll have a very different propulsion system on board. You know, and the other things that might happen to ships, especially if my guys and girls have got anything to do with it, they're going to be designing sailing boats, not just motoring boats. And by that I mean there's a lot of great technology out there, but actually we need something to control the leeway of the vessel a little bit more, such that the bigger thrust that we can provide from wind wings, that's all used in the propulsion of the vessel, and we don't have to depower our technology at all. So three, I think, sorry, should have done two, but there's three for you.
No, that's good. We love that as well. Yeah, John, of course, it's good business to use fuel more efficiently. But do you think the arc of knowing about the environment and the awareness of how we've polluted our oceans is ever a factor in what your customers are asking, or how your engineers and marine and architects are working on the projects?
Yeah, undoubtedly. You know, I think everybody is coming together on this. Everybody, you know, I get, you know, we've got a really great mixture of team here at BR. You've got your older engineers who, you know, really got massive experience in these giant structures that we're putting on. But we've also got a really healthy spread of graduates that bring latest techniques, latest knowledge, bags of enthusiasm, but they want to work in a business like Bartek that is trying to make a difference for the environment. So they're choosing us as an engineering house because of the direction that we're going in. And that's, you know, that is truly gratifying, that we see a push from governments, pull from customers, but also pull from the people that actually want to work for us. So, you know, really all coming together well.
Well, John, this has been a fantastic conversation. We started talking about performance sailing and how innovation in yacht racing could be transferred into shipping, and we've come around a few times. We're so thankful that you made time to talk to us. Again, we have been speaking with John Cooper, the CEO of BAR Technologies, also known as Bartek, and all the way from Portsmouth. So thanks for being on the line with us, and we look forward to catching up with you pretty soon.
No props. Really enjoyed chatting to you, Kat. Cheers.
Thanks, John. Thanks so much for listening to the show this week. If you're not already subscribed, please sign up to Hoisting the Sail wherever you get your podcasts. For more information, visit Windsupport NYC on LinkedIn. Write to us at podcast@windsupport.nyc.